The Kakadu plum is an Australian native superfood containing 100 times more vitamin C than oranges. So why have you never heard of it? PR. No one's drinking a Kakadu smoothie? I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
I'm so excited to tell you JCPenney and country music singer-songwriter Walker Hayes are partnering together on a new limited-time men's collection for the everyday guy. What I love about Walker Hayes is his laid-back nature. He's a family man, and being a country megastar while also having 7 kids, you know he likes to keep his style cool and casual. This new collection is perfect for the guy living the t-shirt life or someone wanting some fresh options that feel just as good. It's easy to wear, affordable styles that celebrate the ultimate family man, along with the quality, durability, and sensibility dads appreciate. Available online Saturday, May 4th at jcp.com and in-store Thursday, May 16th. Just in time for Father's Day. Limited time only. JCPenney, make it count.
Hey, listen.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another one-upsmanship. No bit. Just a grim, straight, informational intro. That's what you deserve. But it's because we want to get right into it, because we got a lot to talk about today. And here with me, Michael Swain, to talk about it is another person.
That person's me, Adam Ganser. This is your only zero-bit video game conversation.
That's right.
Yeah.
Completely straightforward.
Information only.
Wink nor sly nod do you get. Because it's such a big, juicy episode. And what makes it so juicy? I mean, before we started rolling, we were talking about, I think, juicy tongue slaps.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that is a phrase that's now clearly stuck in my brain forever. Who's here with us? Welcome our special guest. Please introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm special guest. I'm Vanessa Guerrero. I've been on this podcast before to talk about video games and feelings, and I'm so excited to do it again.
That's right. And thanks for highlighting that I'm phrasing everything very strangely this episode by echoing it back to me. And I go, huh, that sounds weird. People don't say it that way. So I guess that's the bit. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm about in the same place. Like, I've noticed I've been like talking weird for the last 24 hours because I keep doing that thing where like I want to be more escalated than I am. But then I'm like, but I'm super chill. So it's just like, I don't know. I'm feeling weird, well, dog.
Then we keep saying the word bit, which is a video game word. So your comedy brain starts trying to put together a bit out of that. And you're like, can we just chill for a goddamn second and not make jokes?
Let's just relax and talk about video games. Can we just have a chat, for God's sake? Although I got to say, for this one, there was never a guest in my mind that we could never do this without Vanessa. Like, this is this is Vanessa essential to me, this particular podcast.
Despite the fact that she often goes by Ness, spelled N-E-S, and this is an Xbox Series whatever or PS5 game. Okay.
It's not on PS5.
I'm just
going to
stop trying with the bits. The bits are done. Oh, is it not on PS5?
I don't think so. Is it? I think it just came out on Xbox.
It's the absolute last PlayStation game for Double Fine. They made sure to include it. Yeah, they made sure to include it because it was a promise on the initial Kickstarter. But from this point, now that they're working exclusively with Xbox and Microsoft, it's from here on out, it's just going to be Xbox and Microsoft. But one of Double Fine's specific like asks when they were merging with Xbox was that they honor their promises of the Kickstarter, which was including a PlayStation version.
Yeah, it's on everything.
Yeah. Okay.
Except Switch. And let me just say, Adam.
Yeah.
I'm just host to host now. We promised bits. Our bits have sucked. We promised information.
And we were
Vanessa
wrong.
Vanessa just brought the information.
That's
okay?
why she's so on the show.
Can we just, I'm just talking to you now. We got to step this up, man. We got to save this. Okay?
I'm so sorry. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, it's on all the platforms because of those things Vanessa said so astutely. So let's get into it and talk about Psychonauts 2. As I tweeted when I encountered the start screen, I actively waited 16 years for this game, and I chose the word actively very intentionally. I mean,
yep.
I thought about this game a lot. Like, I thought many times a year, man, I wonder if we'll get that Psychonauts 2 ever. And it's finally here, and not only is it here, it's digested, and I get to talk about it with my friends, which is my favorite part of any media experience. So let's get right into it by passing a checkpoint, which in this game means that something... Moving on. There's a spot for the checkpoint sound. That's all we're really doing it for. Something to hang the sound effects off of. So moving on. God damn it, Adam. The wheels are falling off the bus so early this time.
I feel like
it's
you
a
got
game I care about.
You got psyched out. That's what happened. You've been waiting
16 years for this.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what happened.
I need everyone listening to know how real this is. This has been a frequent topic of conversation since the day you and I met.
It's true. Yeah, like, absolutely. And when I joined IGN, when you get hired at IGN, they make you publicly announce your favorite game of all time. And I said Psychonauts, and I found out no one's ever said that.
What?
And you know what I mean? Like, people will say GoldenEye, and they'll be like, oh, you're in good company. And I'm like, you're kidding me. So someone's got to go to bat for Psychonauts. It's incredible. And Vanessa and I are completely aligned on that.
Yep.
Yeah.
So love the IP. Maybe my favorite game of all time. Adam, to give us why don't you give us a recap of how you felt during our Psychonauts 1 episode? Because we've already done that.
Yeah, yeah. So
let's get some context here.
That's fair. So Psychonauts was a very touchy proposition as a podcaster for me because I think it's a good game. I don't think it's an incredible game, but I know Mike thinks it's incredible. So every version of that conversation that I had in my mind was like, I'm going to have to be a little generous with it. And then I played the game and so I feel like I was a little too accommodating to Psychonauts the first time through in our podcast. I do think it's very good. I think I won't say too much about what I think about this game yet, but this is definitely a sequel. And it's definitely everything a sequel should be for a property like that.
I think that's what it said on the box art. This is definitely a sequel.
Yeah. It should be.
High praise from Caesar, my friend.
No, but that is to say, I don't mean that in like a smug, like, this is the second one. I mean it in the sense
it's
that like...
It's certainly a film.
Right, yeah. Right. This was motion pictures. No, so I mean that it's definitely... It sort of implies that you've played the first one, that you understood it. I think that's like kind of a background. And also, it's definitely delivering to an audience who expects it. Like, who expects it to be a certain way. Whereas I don't think Psychonauts 1 was doing that. But I don't want to say too much more because I don't want to ruin my rant.
Okay. That sounds like part of your rant. So let's just get into the segment that we're nominally already in, which is... Oh, my God.
The speedrun.
Tell me like I'm 8-bit. Now it's called the speedrun. Is that right?
Yeah, you're right.
We didn't think of a more clever name. It just is the speedrun.
Yeah, yeah. We're bad at this podcast.
What if you made it like the speedrun? Like DA, like the speedrun.
Yeah, the speedrun. Yep.
Yeah. That's why you are a paid punch-up writer.
Thank you.
Let's have our guest Vanessa deign us with the speedrun, if you would. I'm going to go ahead and start the clock. Not yet, but soon. And you're going to tell someone who's never heard of Psychonauts before, like, the heart of what is Psychonauts 2 is about, as quickly as you can. Start the clock.
Okay, Psychonauts. We begin shortly after Rhombus of Ruin, which is an amazing VR game that you should have played at some point if you have access to that. Anyways, they are en route to the Motherlode lobe after capturing Lobato, and we open with what feels like a boring office scenario, but is actually a setup to try and get Lobato to say who he works for. And you're in this very great teeth world that I started to learn that maybe I actually have like a fear of teeth. Anyways, then you eventually get to the actual Psychonauts HQ, and you meet a new character named Hollis, who you're pretty sure is the rat. You're kind of sure everyone is the rat at some point. Oh wait, there's a rat in the there's a mole in Psychonauts. That's the whole point. Oh Oh my God, I psyched myself out too. I get it now, Swaim.
Yeah. Anyways, yeah.
There's a mole in the Psychonauts, and they're trying to figure out exactly who it is, Raz specifically, while also learning a new power inside of Hollis's brain, because what are children if not like very eager, but like don't know the means of, nope, go past that. Go out of the story. You're also starting to learn about a new character, villain that the Psychonauts had faced before that is clearly trying to be revived, named... What name do I want to use for here?
Maligula.
Maligula. Thank you. Maligula, who drowned a bunch of people in Grulovia beforehand, which is just so happens to be where Raz was from. And then eventually you realize that the male guy is actually somebody else in his body and that there's a great Jack Black character that's a...
Oh,
wow. Oh, my God. I'm completely... They all live happily ever after.
Stop the clock. The clock melted like some Dali painting before our eyes.
You destroyed the entire Sonic franchise there. Like he,
Ford
like,
Kruller yeah. is the man's name, I think.
Yeah.
That we were trying to... Man, I knew you were fucked as soon as you decided to interpret the prompt as a plot synopsis. Because you need to know so much. The plot is
yep.
so
I know.
Technically detailed and has so much previous knowledge. I thought you'd say, like, it's a 3D platformer where your psychic spies stop the clock. But, you know,
here's
it's
the thing.
That kind of episode. So
I've
I'm
done
happy
the speed run
that.
For more difficult yeah. to interpret games on this show. I've done
That's
it for
right.
a Fallout game that I hadn't played in years. Yet for some reason,
yeah,
if you give the computer too much information than it likes, it just goes to loading screen real fast. So that's
well,
where
that's
I'm
what
at.
Happened here. Let's bail on this segment. Let's go right past another checkpoint.
Right.
I'm just going to jump.
You know, there's fast travel in this game. You can, like, zip from one corridor of the lobe to another, which I really appreciated.
That's right. So we yeah. took a leap through the Jungian interconnected subconscious and went into a different person's brain to find out something horrible that they have deeply repressed because it's fun. It's a children's game. And now we're in the rant section. That's arguable. I don't think it's a children's game. No.
We'll
get to that.
I have a preferred order for this.
Has a preferred order.
I do.
This,
I think
is what I was going to say. So go for it,
Adam. I think the order should be you, and then it should be me, and then it should be Vanessa. That's what I think.
That is an unprecedented order we've never done before.
I know.
So let's try it because everything's going so well already. Hey, why not? I'll rant first. Player one, Michael Swaim, plugging in and ranting at you. See, the rants have a whole thing, plugging in, player one. It bothers me that it's just called speedrun. Okay, Psychonauts 2, a game I've waited for a long, long time. As Vanessa expertly wove the many threads together before our eyes, it actually did remind me of things I like even more about this game. But I think Adam's about to be very surprised because my major takeaway from this game is that it turned me into the fan I hate, which is that I like the old stuff better, man.
Whoa.
And I feel like there's still so much to like about this, and I was so excited, and I'm like the yuck someone's yum guy, or I'm now that because I'm compelled to talk about the game because I do a podcast, I do want to cover it. Or maybe I'm trying to not give Adam what he wants or not be cast in that role, but I'm leading with the fact that I did feel as it went that maybe I'm just older now, but I'm like, where's that sense of magic I felt from the lungfish level and it didn't have as many of those for me. And what it had more instead was a feeling of like, this is a bunch of people who are really good at game design. Who have all this shit all buttoned up and have done it for decades, doing it again, very, very competently. But everything felt like a safe choice. And the stuff that really delighted me the most, like the concept of your fast travel being a Jungian collected consciousness, like literally just that thought pun or whatever, or you know, the various ideas, all the ideas that are my favorite ideas are in play in one. So... it's great as an update. It should be played. It's more Psychonauts. But I think Adam will be surprised to hear that I'm like, it was good. there are a couple moments that really blew me away that we'll dig into, and that's more than most games give me, a moment that blows me away. But not as much as Psychonauts, and I don't know if that's a commentary on Psychonauts, Psychonauts 2, the nature of sequels, or the nature of being a young man and playing something. And being, so 16 years ago, I was 20. That's not that young. But I felt, so that's still a little old to be feeling childlike wonder. Like, Psychonauts gave me such a feeling of childlike wonder where I felt pure unbridled imagination at play. And Psychonauts 2, I felt really good, competent game design at play, which is great. You want that. But it felt a little more controlled and a little more, none of the levels were as innovative in the way that Psychonauts 2 kept flipping the fucking, like, wow. There's no Milkman level equivalent. This game never rises to that height.
Wow. All
right.
Wow. Wow. Stunning rant from Michael Swain. Stunning. Player 2 grimly taking the controller from the corpse of Mike's idealism. Hey, so I thought this was good. I like this game. I thought this game was better than the first game.
What a reversal!
No, I thought it was better. I thought it was much better than the first game. I see what Mike is saying about how none of the level design is as conceptually innovative as the previous game. Like, I see how there's no
the
level.
The cooking show was close, but
yeah,
that
yeah,
was
yeah.
about it.
I see how there's no level where you are a giant crushing a city full of lungfish, or how you're, there's no X-Files level. You know what I mean? Like, that stuff doesn't exist. But what I think this game did that the first one failed to do is use the conventions of this premise, which is traveling into people's brains, to actually illuminate more clearly what's going on in that person's life than the first one did, which to me is the greatest thing about this franchise. This game did that so much better than the first game did in two ways. One, it picked people whose stories matter to the larger plot, so it wasn't as disorganized as the first game was. Like, as much as we like the lungfish level or the milkman level, who gives a shit about those two characters? They don't matter. Right?
Whereas, or my favorite level of all, Napoleon guy, but why do you even...
Who gives a shit? They're not part of the story. Whereas, I mean, and I mean that in like a narrative sense, right? So I understand that people enjoy it and that it's cool conceptually. I've never disputed that. But like, as a storyteller, those things are offshoots from the story. Whereas in this game, every person's brain you go into is actually purposeful and there's emotional revelations. Some of them are very profound. Like, there's one character who's an alcoholic, and I don't want to say everything about the level, quite honestly, because I thought that was some of the best storytelling I've ever seen in game design. I was like, wow, this is fucking incredible. I think it's, like, the best level for that in this game. It's not the most fun. So there's a lot of that. There's a lot to be praised here. I think that it's a sequel in the sense that they added more stuff, and most of the stuff they added was better. They enhanced and perfected what Psychonauts did in terms of game mechanics, so that it was better. It's still not very good. The shooting is not very good. The punching is not very good. The platforming is not very good. And I don't mean not very good.
Better
like
than one.
Yeah. I don't mean not very good like it's bad. I mean not very good like, hey, man, the standard is Mario, and it's not even close. You know, like, and I get that it's an indie-funded game, and I'm happy to concede that for what they have resource-wise, it's fantastic. I'm happy to right away set aside any dispute about Tim Schafer's place on Mount Rushmore. Put his face on there. I totally get it. I totally agree. It's still not as good of a game mechanically. That's just true. I also...
Well, and level design innovation... I'm sorry, it's a rant. Never mind.
That's okay. That's okay, buddy. I'm excited to hear your pushback. I really am. So I don't care about Grulovia. I don't care. And I don't care...
You besmirch the people of
Grulovia. I just don't care. That story is hard to care about. I think all the other interpersonal pieces of the Maligula story and how she matters are interesting. But I think the large sort of catharsis to it all falls a little flat because it's all sort of a remote event that we don't completely or clearly understand, and that's a storytelling failure. Otherwise, I genuinely liked it, and that is my rant.
All right, player 3, this is, it must be an N60. What was the first with four plugs? Was that the N64?
I think so.
With four player capabilities.
Well, yeah. you could get those like in like those strips, you know, that would Taps. Add they would add ports. Even on Nintendo, I believe, like the original one.
Okay. I'm always trying to figure out what theoretical console this podcast is, but I guess we still don't know because we could be using a CubeTap. So, Vanessa, I killed some time there. Are your thoughts assembled enough for a rant?
I think so.
Do it.
I think I'm ready. All right. First and foremost, I'd like to just get out of the way up top. Mike and I have both discussed this, that one of our mutual worst shared traits is that we'll overlook just about anything for Amazing Story. And I overlook a lot for Amazing Story. I overlook the fact that the first game mechanically wasn't exactly where I wanted it to be. And playing Psychonauts 2 definitely highlights a lot of the elements that were clunkier that I kind of either waved over or sometimes maybe even willfully debated against about the first game because of how much better the second one is. But the second one is not without its moments that I kind of wished for more. I wished for a longer game because there were so many big teased stories that I feel like didn't really get its just moments in the sun, whether it be the relationship between Helmet, Fulbear, and Bob Zanotto. I really wish we could have gotten a little bit more of that. To like some of the Grillovia elements, because so much of the mental health aspects of the story were so well thought out, and so much of like the mental health aspects that goes with being a refugee, but not enough on like the actual Grulovian family elements that they put so much emphasis at the end. Additionally, I feel like as much as I found a lot of that humor there in the first game, the humor was super strong in the first half, and then because of the nature of what they were discussing, it tended to drop speed at the second half. And while I didn't feel like that happened here, it was missing some of the extra irreverent, gross out, weird for the sake of weird elements of humor. Like, I didn't really have my Dugan blowing up a squirrel part to it here. While the interns were amazing and hilarious, everyone, unless they were like literally out of their minds, was a little bit more grounded than the first game. And I really only got that with like Dr. Lobato, which are things that I love, but I would like to see it peppered through, because one of the things that I love is that Psychonauts mixes this great overarching sense of empathy with like these absolute bizarre, eclectic, irreverent types of humor. And while it was there, it wasn't there in full force the way it was in the first game, which is a much more flawed game. But the humor in the first half was definitely something that I was missing. Additionally, this is less of a rant because it's not that it's like poorly built in my mind. It's just I suck at it and I hated it so much. Good fucking God, the germ level. Such cool world building. That stupid ball. That stupid fucking ball. I fell off that stupid fucking ball so many times and rant.
Or that part where you have to go up the elevator and they keep taunting you by saying, oh, the elevator's fixed just as you complete it. That part.
Like, oh, yeah.
On the bowling ball.
I was going crazy.
Yeah. Great rant. We pass another checkpoint, which means you pressing the stick forward and you thought you were going horizontally, but you're actually going vertically and the surface is something that it wasn't before. That's good game design.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Have you been thinking about LASIK but not sure if you're a candidate? Just go to LASIK.com/quiz and take our free candidacy quiz. In just a few minutes, you'll know if LASIK is likely right for you. And if it is, we'll connect you with experienced LASIK doctors in your area. Start your journey towards 20/20 vision. Take our free candidacy quiz at LASIK.com/quiz. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Hey guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
Now it's game on, which means we get to just chat. And the first thing I'll say is I want to agree with Vanessa about the humor of the supporting cast, which is interesting. The supporting kids in the first game felt like refugees from a 90s Nickelodeon show.
Yeah.
And the supporting cast in this game felt like cool collection of Gap kids who are like perfectly friendly and nice to hang out with. Not as funny. Definitely not as funny.
They were. I also think they were a little meaner than the kids were in the first one, which made them
they make you less likable or whatever.
Yeah, you know. They weren't. I think they had bits, but their bits didn't land as much because they were kind of a little bit meaner and not in a kid like way, in like a more competitive weird way.
Did anyone ever get Raz's original clothing back, or was that an attempt to update his outfit?
I think that was an attempt to update his outfit because I never got his original clothing back.
I thought at the end of the game we'd earn the original outfit, and we never did, which bothered me.
I thought so too.
I also wish it was longer. Yeah, go ahead, Vanessa.
No, I also wish it was longer. There were so many elements at like the end of the game where I'm like, do I get to like expand on this more? I felt the same way with like a lot of the kids, especially like Norma leading this mole charge. And I get what they were trying to do. I get that they were like, you know, trying to do this like, oh, maybe everyone else thinks you're the spy and that's why they're treating you that way. I feel like the only kid whose humor really landed was Dugan's sister, Samantha, with like specifically the whale bit was one that made me laugh really hard.
That was one of the only and power of whale.
Yeah, power of whale. And then just seeing the whale come down, like all of Samantha's bits were funny. But they also didn't really get its time in the sun. And I think it's because the only like child that Raz interacts with as much as he does in the first game is Lily, who is his girlfriend. And he had a best friend. He had Dugan around for like a lot of the first game. He didn't really have a best friend character other than an old man here that he could do like dumb kid riffs with.
Yeah, they had, I mean, they tried to make him closer to level with the adults that he's investigating. Because I think
the promise of the first one is that he would be a real spy now.
Yeah.
And I think they achieved that. He feels like he's really involved in real spy shit this time.
And it feels like he grows. I mean, like the thing that we haven't even talked about in any of the rants even is that like they kind of do a more daring sort of plot device for Raz, which is like he learns he has the ability to actually manipulate people's minds, and then he has to accept the consequences for that. And they're stark. They're stark consequences. And that's kind of what this story is really about in a broader sense. And that's, I don't know, like it's not as whimsical. It's not kids at a camp.
Yeah. It's harder. It kind of has to be grounded by the nature of a lot of these discussions. Because when it was kids in a camp, it was like, oh, ha ha ha, Raz's friends are kind of deranged. And there was, and I'm not saying this is a detractor at all. I love it a lot. I think maybe the humor just needed to exist somewhere else. I just think it should have been more of wherever that somewhere else was. It's obviously so clear in the Bob Zanotto episode, but it's kind of the through line for everything, which is there's more empathy given to everybody has the seed of something that can spin into something else. And I've actually been talking about this a lot lately, ever since I played this. A big thing of the through line is sometimes the tools that help you in survival become the thing that hurt you later. And for some people, it's more difficult to figure out when those things no longer serve you than others. From Maligula's character to Cassie, like with the multiple identities, it's pretty much like from beginning to the end, the tools that served you then don't serve you now. It is time to let these things go.
I mean, I think that's an interesting thing that's going on in media in general, a topic that we kind of never visited until, like, I don't know, the last 15 years.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it is. And it's just kind of the basic precept of modern talk therapy, which is funny.
Right. I mean, but
it's like teaching people that.
Well, that's fine though, because you know, I mean, a lot of stories are sort of basic moral parables, so it's kind of nice to have an updated framework for those parables.
What was interesting to me is that they were parables that I do feel. So this is where I will start hyping the game up. Is I think there are profound storytelling moments in and of themselves, line to line, that would never exist if this were made by any team other than a team who were people who are in their middle age or older.
Yeah.
Like, there's stuff that you actually can only learn from life. Like, the game has real wisdom in it. Some of the stuff that these skeletons in the maternity ward inside, is that Hollis's Hot Streak?
Oh, yeah, Hollis's Hot Streak.
Yeah.
Say some, like, what would I consider pitch black satire. Like, they hit the jackpot, which means they get pregnant in the real world, and they're like, now we'll be happy and our marriage will be saved or something like that. I'm like, damn, dude, this is like some real, the themes are mature and adult, which is interesting because everything's bright colors and it's still in the style of, but you can tell from the writing that all the writers have like lived lives. You know what I mean? It had a real grounding to it of like, this is a real story written by mature adults.
I mean, that tells
which
you
is almost a weird thing to say about a Psychonauts game.
But it's not, but I could because feel that. It tells you they were going for the same people that played the original Psychonauts. That's what
grown
that tells. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
exactly.
What that tells you.
And like, Raz feels grown up.
I mean, to a degree, yeah. I mean, that actually that's what's funny is because like when he acts like a kid, I think the game's a little like, eh. You know what I mean? But like when he starts to act like sort of a young 20-year-old, which is about the age I'd think he really was mentally, you know, it starts to really work.
I also just find it weird to realize that the voice actor is at least 16 years older than they were when they recorded the original Raz.
Oh,
I
yeah.
I was just thinking about that the whole time and trying to hear it in their voice and feeling like I could. Like when you listen to, when you watch a modern Simpsons and you feel bad for Kavanaugh, you're like, oh no, Marge sounds real gravelly.
Oh no, Richard Horvitz hasn't missed a beat. Like, I've heard him in other things. And I feel, actually, I was playing Ratchet and Clank Rift Apart, in which he is a character in it. He's, oh my God, I can't remember the name, but he's a tiny murder robot. But he's basically just doing Zim in it, which is
totally.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And it's like a higher voice than Rad, and he's still doing it. I don't know how Richard Horvitz has like protected his voice to where he could just do like small children forever, but he can. But like, I think.
Oh, wait. Oh, is it the antagonist from Rift Apart is the same actor as Rez?
No, not the antagonist. He's
That is Armin Shimmerman, who's Quark on Deep Space Nine, which is amazing. He's Dr. Nefarious.
The tiny robot.
I remember that one. Yes.
Whenever you get like a new weapon or you go down to the arena. But
Doom!
Like,
we're going to fight in the arena. Yeah, that guy.
Exactly. He's basically just doing, he even says like filthy humans at one point. He's just doing Zim.
And I said Julie Kavanaugh, and Marge's voice is Julie Kavner. Apologies. I had to get that out or I would get so much shit. But let's continue.
I didn't even notice. But I think Raz kind of needs to be a kid, because especially when you're talking about mental health, anything, and especially in like ludonarrative storytelling, where as the main character, like you are the thing, this is your vehicle. It's very important to establish that main character, whoever it is, whoever you are, has an element of like not knowing anything. Because I feel like anytime you get to like a mental health story in like TV or movies, it's such a, well, I've got nothing going on my end. I'm doing great. And I know how to tell everybody what they need to do to fix their shit. And it's just, A, it's not fun, and B, it's just very willfully misguided. So I think by Raz being inherently a child, he has that, like, I don't know, almost that, like, Plato essence of, like, the only thing I know about everything is that I don't know anything. And it's why he needs to have, like, it's why he needs to have these little kid elements, because he needs someone to pull him aside and be like, no matter how much you know that it's almost nothing.
Which is a very adult, like, you only know that once you're an adult and you go, oh no, I'm in my mid-30s now and I don't know shit. I guess my parents didn't know shit that whole time. Oh no, no one knows shit. Oh my God. Which I think is the healthy conclusion to arrive at. And I'm more scared by people who are like, no, I'm 40 and I know everything. I know how everything should go. I'm like, that's a much more unhealthy viewpoint, in my opinion. But I do think it's also fascinating because it highlights something that only gaming can do as a medium, which is, so we were talking about, so like, you know, back in the day, so much fiction was based on the id, ego, and superego because that was an accepted psychological, like, and it lends itself to storytelling, right? Our three is a good number. They're big, iconic, monolithic things. You can make characters that represent them. So we'd have all kinds of parables that support that and normalize that as a real thing. Oh, that's real, the id, ego, and superego. I do love what Adam points out about how we have a lot more stories nowadays that are normalizing the much more modernized version of that idea, which is family of origin stuff and all this stuff about how you develop behavior patterns through learned coping mechanisms and then you try to apply them later in life to mixed effect. That's like a more modern view of, you know, it's like updating the acting method from, no, you got to be the guy, to like the more complex method we have today. And you could... that story of learning and adapting and having coping mechanisms and trying to use the same strategy, but having to use it in a different way to like survive or cope or thrive, actually is so interestingly aligned to gaming because gaming's interactive. Like, I think gaming's the perfect way to tell that story better than a movie.
Easily.
Because a staple of gaming is you develop new powers and you apply them to problems over and over. So it's like primed to make statements about family of origin, how we use our coping mechanisms, how we attack problems. And that actually makes me wish the game had gone further again. I'm like, so then why aren't there like satirical twists on... like, at some point, Raz should use his power and it blows up in your face. Or some point, Raz should have to actively give up all his powers to succeed. Or I don't know. I just thought all the colors that they're working for, so working with, are so cool. And the palette's there. And I did feel like they could go farther in a lot of directions. But also, I can't make a game. And, like, it was kickstarted. Like, it's still so... and it's a 25-hour game. You know? I feel like such a prick saying... it should be 80 hours and much more challenging. It's like, fuck you,
this is where I feel obligated to jump in, and I actually disagree with almost all of that. Like, I do not think it should be longer. I think it was exactly as long as it should be. I was getting tired of the story by the end because there was a lot of it. This game needed to be sized enough to justify... on like the core loops and mechanics and stuff, which are not that diverse. Like, and you're saying, for instance, like, oh, that this game should explore some of these concepts and make them take kind of...
no, like the badges were pointless. There were whole pointless
systems. Yeah, they were pointless.
And pins and badges are so not needed.
Well, and I would say that was kind of part of Psychonauts 1, too. Like, it was clear they were trying to pad out the game. Like, they had a really solid story and levels, and they were like, okay, so how can I give the fans like 80 hours of content... with what is essentially 25 hours of game.
The figments are an attempt at that.
Yeah, and I just think, like, they don't need to... I don't have any nostalgia for this game, and so therefore I'm trying to evaluate it from, like, what do I want from this experience that I didn't have a lot of expectations for? And I think it's really solid, given that. I really do. Like, and I think that the problem is I'm not the right guy to evaluate this as a success or not, because it really seems like only people like you guys are the people who can judge whether it worked or not. You know what I mean? Like, and I mean that in a, like, I don't mean to like degrade my own opinion. I just mean, like, you are the target audience. It's for people who already played Psychonauts 1 and loved it. That's who
and needed. It did work. It just felt slightly safe in that way, where they knew who their audience was. And it makes sense that it was a kickstarted game, right? It felt like fan service for the people who paid for it to get made, which it should be, I suppose, you know? Like,
but I also,
some things are well just that good. Indulgent.
Yeah, exactly.
I think this was like a really... measured, and I said, so I could see that that's a disappointing word, but like a very triumphant version of a measured success, you know, like it's it's like, look, they needed to justify a lot of game stuff that I think the original fans don't care that much about, but like they needed it to be a good platformer.
I mean, it was faithful to, as Vanessa alluded to, but I just think it's worth highlighting. There's a VR game called The Rhombus of Ruin that freaking no one played because statistically very few people have access yet to VR.
Yeah.
And yet it fully involves that story thread. Like,
yeah,
it was fresh off the events of Rhombus of Ruin, which was like more loyal to itself than I thought it even needed to be. It was interesting that they're like,
Psychonauts, we integrated this. Care.
Psychonauts is real. Psychonauts is a continuing story. The beats have to matter and exist going forward. I was like, oh, good on ya. Like, cool. I taking your IP seriously. Okay.
Well, I mean, it's like if they put out an Undertale sequel, we're not going to assume that it's going to be made for a lot of new eyes. It's going to exist for Undertale.
Right. Like, didn't they, by the way?
Yeah. But I mean, in, like,
it's an anagram of it.
Yeah. Like
Deltarune. That's it. Deltarune.
It's one of those things where I'm like, it's like if they brought back Firefly. They're not bringing back Firefly for new audiences. We know Never. Who that's for. Right. But saying that and like knowing that like Psychonauts 2 exists for those that loved Psychonauts 1, I did watch a few people play it for the first time. And while the initial story still, like the initial story moment still left a few questions, by the time they got like deeper into the game, it made them want to play the first one. And I'm not saying that's like something across the board, but it is something that I witnessed and was cool to see, that knowing nothing about the first game or even Rhombus of Ruin, that and that there was like initial confusion at like why they should care about certain elements or story plot. It was cool enough and unique enough. And also we're just thirsty for platformers that it made a few people want to go back and play the first one, well, which I think is especially good for something that like exists as fan service, but is also bringing people back to wanting to explore the franchise.
I'm playing both sides like an evil bastard. So, like, I also think that part of people's reaction to this game is the time it's coming out, which is in the middle of, like, a fucking desert of video gaming. You know what I mean? Like, this game, this is the perfect time for this game to come out, because if it had come out in a year where there was, I don't know, a couple other platformers or, like, big-time Switch releases or, I don't know, for Horizon Forbidden West or any of that stuff, I don't think this game would have drawn the kind of attention that people are giving it, even on an individualized experience. Like, it was like the only new game for like 3 months. You know what I mean?
I will say, like, wholeheartedly agree, because, you know, due to the pandemic, things are extremely slow right now. We're in a gaming desert, but at the same time, it feels like people are moving past things fairly quickly, because Deathloop was so anticipated, and then the conversation almost immediately halted after, despite the fact that it like had pretty good reviews. We may be in a gaming desert, but we're actually kind of far from a nostalgia and platformer desert, because that's kind of all that came out this year. And a lot of the ones that did come out this year came out this year and came out swinging hard. Like, for me, the only other game of the year contention other than Psychonauts 2 is Ratchet & Clank Rift Apart, which is another nostalgia-tinged platformer that is doing exceptionally well.
No, I can't. None of this is script. I can't do this. Wait a minute. So, like, because there's a bunch of games that completely deserve Game of the Year conversations that are not.
Well, we should do an Game of the Year episode, but yeah, that will be I mean, that seems like a lot of effort just to say Inscription's the Game of the Year.
You and Dave with this fucking Inscription. Look. So,
oh, have you played it, Adam?
Hey, I've seen a little bit of it. Yeah, I haven't been able to play it because I don't have a PC.
I think you'd appreciate.
I'm sure
what
I would.
It's doing.
I'm sure I would. I don't think it's bad. I just think it's one
I'm
of those.
I'm using this voice.
I know you are.
Everything's fine.
If you, I'm going to remember this moment, because I'm coming back and I'm gonna stab Inscription to death when we do this podcast. I promise.
Oh my God.
No, I didn't think you'd ever deign to cover it. I imagine
I'd cover
you wouldn't
it.
Get covered.
Of course I would.
Okay.
Why not?
We'll see.
But wait, though. So Ratchet & Clank also was a very good game. But we did a one-upsmanship on Ratchet & Clank. Vanessa wasn't on that episode. But, like, we thought it was okay. Like, that was kind of the vibe. And, like, actually, I find myself partially agreeing with Vanessa. Like, that is one of the games of the year. You know what I mean? Like, it's, like, sort of indisputable.
Well, it wasn't a great year. It was a pandemic
year.
Yeah.
Right. And so, like, that's why I'm like, look, this is where the five-year rule really ought to apply. You know what I mean? Because, like, I don't know that we're going to remember Psychonauts 2 like a year from now. Like, do you think we're going to remember
it? I mean, I'll remember it for the rest of my life because I love the IP so much. But no, not we could. Oh, you mean will anyone be talking about it? Like, will it be in the zeitgeist? Absolutely not.
Like, will it mark anything significant? Will it have any, like, will, as storytelling, will it matter?
I don't know if it'll mark anything significantly, but as storytelling, like, I feel like if you love storytelling and if you love talking about storytelling, you have to include ludonarrative storytelling in that conversation. I don't think there's any way to, because it's like, it's the next step in like, how do we develop what a story is? And I know that like in the overarching scheme of video game conversations, I don't think Psychonauts 2 is going to be included. But when it comes to storytelling conversations, I feel like it has to be included, especially when it comes to ludonarrative stories, because it does this thing by telling a story that only it can tell correctly. There are so many mediums where you watch something for the first time tell a story that only it's able to tell, like the first time you see Singing in the Rain and you realize that can never happen again because it's a story about a change right. that's never going to have something like that. And I feel like Psychonauts 2 is such a good indicator of like, this is the next vehicle of storytelling if you really want to create empathy as like a lived experience by the player. Because when it comes to like, the first time I saw a panic attack sequence and it was illustrated mm-hmm. in a way that felt real but wasn't triggering, but was like a comfortable mirror in which something else saw me, or the like conversations of addiction given more care and more thoughtfulness as to like how it starts and how it keeps going and how it really is literally living one day at a time, more than any movie or anything I've ever seen done as well as the Bob Zanotto storyline and how that was handled. And if you're somebody that like loves storytelling, is researching storytelling, and is kind of looking at like what these next advancements are, while it's small, while its footprint isn't huge, Psychonauts 2 did do something different and at this point untouchable when it comes to telling this kind of story.
Mm. Agreed, but it's impossible to have the same earth-shattering effect that Psychonauts 1 did if you're going to stay faithful to the same bag of tricks, which they do, and it's an evolution of the bag of tricks, but it will never be the first time anyone ever thought of that because it's a sequel.
That's the thing.
A real thing. Yeah.
Well, so can I, like, I actually think that this game does a few things that I want to quantify what Vanessa's talking about. So, cause like, to me, there's like three or four innovations that are like, wow, this is unique to this game, or if not unique, it's done really well and memorably in this game. One of them is, they managed to create actual like behavior actions, like player actions that mean something abstract that are different than say like, you know, jumping from this to that. Like, so in Ratchet and Clank, when I shoot something or when I jump to a platform, there's not another level to it. There's no meta conversation about those actions, right? The only meta conversation is sort of like, how do these story elements weave together, and does that reflect anything about our society and so on, right? Whereas in Psychonauts, they have that whole mechanic where you're actually zipping between ideas. And it's literally a zip line mechanic, but it's fusing ideas together to create a new behavioral or emotional sensation in the host whose brain you're in.
Right.
And that's a really, that's a lot of abstraction that they managed to make very meaningful in a single action.
And elegant and seamless.
Yeah, and there's a bunch of things like that. Like that, there's a bunch of little things like that that they tried.
Every enemy is not like, well, we thought of a cool goblin, so we drew it. Well, we thought of a cool bat, so we drew that. Every enemy represents something. You're like, I get it.
Right.
I get the reference, and I derive meaning from the way the enemy is. Like a panic attack. Oh, that makes sense that is its attack sequence.
And I would say, stuff like that. I would say this game more faithfully executed that notion than the first game did. And I think because of that, it's actually clearer. Like, it's actually clearer what they were going for, like, causally and thought, like, narratively and linearly than the other one was. So there's that. Mm-hmm. The other thing is, and, like, again, this game didn't invent it, but it did it uniquely. There's so few games that are able to visualize abstract concepts in the environment the way this game is able to. Mm-hmm. Like for instance, you talked about how much you hate the teeth. That teeth level was fantastic. Fantastic.
Yeah, it starts with a banger.
Yeah, that's a banger, and it's not just a banger.
The levels are structured like the way you structure tracks on an album, I felt.
Yeah.
They're like, yeah, you gotta have a hit up top, you gotta close with a hit, you can bury some weak levels in the middle.
They aren't all amazing, but the three or four that are amazing not just because they're cool, designed, or visually interesting, but because they take the craft of visual representation to a new level that other games have not tried. Like, I would say in some ways, Last of Us 2 is exploring similar themes to this game, you know? Mm-hmm. But, like, Last of Us 2 is the least abstract game I can think of. Like, there's no abstraction right in that game. Whereas this game dares to be entirely in the abstract. Like, most of its meaning is derived from abstractions based on player actions. And that is daring. That's a daring thing. And that is cool about this game. And it's much cooler here than it was in Psychonauts 1, in my opinion.
Deeply so. And I think a big part of that is... and just something that I like would like to see happen across gaming, across storytelling, across like anybody that's trying to figure out how to tell something as complicated from like mental health to race to anything that like can't really be told from one point of view. They sought consult. They like asked several teams. One of them, I believe, was like takethis.org, which is specifically a company that works for like mental health and gaming causes. They looked for consultation to make sure that when they tell this story, not a single human being from like every spectrum of like mental health experiences can feel like, I don't want to say not included, but like othered and targeted in some way that like uses language that could be like distractingly dated within a matter of like months and years after a second look. And that's the kind of thing that can only be achieved when you like look for consult outside of yourself to gain further insight. And it's something that isn't as common in gaming, or storytelling, but I feel like should be. And this is a good indicator as to why.
It's a new Transcendental Sacrifice comes to mind as well. They did a great job.
They take their premise very seriously, like very, very, and they take a social responsibility for their premise, and that's like, I don't know, man, that's pretty daring. If we're gonna applaud games like Last of Us 2, which I do, or even Red Dead Redemption, which I do, for carrying out these like player actions that have meaning, this game has so much of that. It's like loaded with
for
it.
Real.
That said, okay, can I transition to something else? You're going to hate me for this, but I don't care. I don't think the Grulovia thing works. You know, like how we were talking about it as an emotional core thing? I don't think it works. And here's what I mean by that. I feel like I'm being educated about what Grulovia is the entire way through the story so that I care at the end, and that didn't work for me. Did that work for you guys? Are you like, by the end, you're like, wow, this Grulovia story like matters emotionally to you?
No more than, but in any Star Trek episode where they say like, well, millions of people were killed, it's hard for it to matter in your bones immediately like an animal, but it matters to me. You know, of course, if when millions of people die, that matters to me.
Right.
Right.
But
so the Grulovian people, when it's revealed, I guess it would have been great if we had a level where we experienced in some way what Maligula did, like we experienced the flood or the tsunami.
Right, which we don't until the end when we fight her, and it's supposed to be a cathartic wrap-up, and it's not because we never had like what you might call the midpoint of this story.
Well, the villain's darkest sin that they committed that really showcases their mental illness challenge is not actually lived out. And that seems like a whiff.
That's a big problem because the last level should be really awesome.
They're more concerned with how Ford feels about it than the thing itself.
That's right. Yeah. And the last level was planned and executed as though they had done a midpoint in the scene where you like saw the genocide.
Right.
If that happened and then you do this Grulovia level, it's a home run.
Oh my God. Or if you went in her head and did something that was a metaphor for genocide, that's chilling. You know?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Anyway, I just wanted to point that out because I just want to make sure that piece of the narrative got commented on because it bothered me
a lot. You get such a small piece of it, and I wish we had more, because when it happened, it made sense. Where, like, Raz sees all the insects holding the protest signs and then realizes that they're, like, crushed under his feet, and that they're, like, represented of humans and of those actual protesters. And I feel like if that moment had, like, a little bit more weight or was extended or played through a little bit more, it might have it might have like had better impact. Or if you like explored it through the family, because it's entirely doable, because like so this could be the fact that I'm especially loopy every morning, but I'm gonna go on a little bit of a long walk to get to a point. I recently rewatched The Shining.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I realized that the only reason why you believe that Jack Torrance did all of these things that you never initially saw, the, like, you know, dislocating Danny's shoulder and like what kind of man or father he has been, you never see those things, but the only reason you believe it's there and that weight is hanging over you is because of like the way the family acts, the way they've like adjusted their behaviors around this man who they can't really like trust and who they don't mm-hmm. know when or if he's going to fly off the handle. And in so many things, you can get away with not showing what the actual instance was if you show how much of like an earth-shattering change it was in the people that are like left to survive it and like reckon with it. And we get all of these like moments of levity with like Raz and his Grulovian family, but we don't get to see these moments of like how were they changed forever because of what happened in their past. Because like I know that as like somebody whose family came from like separate countries that were experiencing different kinds of conflict, I know that we like bag a ton of food when we leave a buffet because we still have that like internal feeling of like when is something gonna happen again. I know we have like these changed behaviors and approaches to things because a grenade went off in our bloodline a few years back, but I don't really see it here.
Yeah, the effects of being refugees,
which is
yeah,
well, are called for. They call upon that for emotional weight, but the emotional weight isn't super explored. They mostly stay in the levity range.
And you do have to do it, though. You do have to do it if you're going to use it as an emotional mechanic. You know what I mean? Like, you do have to you have to let dumbos like me in so that I know what that is. You know?
Exactly. Because, like, it's, oh, ha ha ha, they're a traveling family and they just set up wherever. But why? Why do they not have, like, a set place or a set home? And how, like, we see the chin up part of it and not everything else. And I think especially when it comes to, like, refugee type conversations, that's a really difficult conversation to have if you don't have that much knowledge on it. Or if, like, if it's something that you're kind of scared of looking in the face, because most people are, because they feel like they're helpless to the situation, but they don't know what to do. So like a homeless man approaching them for money, they rather not look at it in the eyes and maybe just like make it sing and dance instead.
That's tough. I mean, so yeah, this is such a mixed review of both applauding them for their ambition and then scolding them for not going far enough with their narrative elements, or not scolding, but just sort of like,
wishing for more because everything else was better done.
Yeah, that's right. That's the right tone.
It's like you've demonstrated that you can show me that empathy and that you can show me that forethought and that social responsibility and, you know, bringing in outside help and all these other elements. I wouldn't be so hard on something unless I knew it could do better in that element.
You know, I'm so hard on you, don't you, Lieutenant? Because you can take it. It's that. Yeah. I know you can take it. Okay. So, with a great air of suspense and not knowing what I'll say, that's honest. I don't know what I'll say. I'm going to move us along into our final segment, keep or delete.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union, a savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Have you been thinking about LASIK but not sure if you're a candidate? Just go to LASIK.com/quiz and take our free candidacy quiz.
In just a few minutes, you'll know if LASIK is likely right for you. And if it is, we'll connect you with experienced LASIK doctors in your area. Start your journey towards 20/20 vision. Take our free candidacy quiz at LASIK.com/quiz. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Hey guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait!
Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
Where we have to take our nuanced mixed opinion and slot it in just one way or the other, that those are the only options. This is where we decide whether the game would make it onto a celestial hard drive of important seminal games that we need to like show the aliens to prove that humanity is worth saving, or when humanity is all destroyed, this will be the only games that make it to heaven. Like, however you want to conceptualize that. We like to think of it as finite, but we have never decided how many games fit on it. But, you know, so with that nebulous goal in mind, let's say, Adam, would you keep or delete this game to make room for other games?
Okay, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to keep this game, but I'm going to delete Psychonauts 1 because I think this is...
You'd update by replacing. Yeah. Okay, got it.
I think the French...
A move we haven't heard before, but I think it's valid, and I think I'll probably use that move in the future.
Yeah. I think that was sort of the way we talked about Horizon Zero Dawn, right? Like, yeah. And I think that the sequel came out here, and I think it's better as a game, and therefore this is the one. The concept deserves to be kept, so this is the one to keep, in my opinion.
I guess I'll go next. I'm going to delete it, Adam, which I guess is predictive. It's like, it's weird that we're in a universe where Adam kept and I deleted, because I probably, because I do have nostalgia for it, got more joy out of the game than you did. Not that there's a way to quantify or prove that, but I'm like, I love this game, but I'm going to delete it because of the thing I said about how in my gut, the first game was a revelation and the second one is like stepping up to the plate and doing the same thing again, even slightly better. But I'm like, but the first one was magic because it was the first one. There's something special about the first, and I can't. Mm. This didn't evolve the bag of tricks so much that it supplanted the first one in my mind. And I like things that feel weird and underpolished and janky. So I like the first one better. There we go.
Wow.
Vanessa, what do you think?
I am selfishly keeping both. While the first one was absolutely a revelation to me, I think the second one, and this is part of what I mean of like the selfish elements of it, the second one just feels like it's for me. It feels like it's mine. It feels like something was made with all of the Vanessa boxes to check, which I know might make it not for everyone, but it is why I adore it so much, from like the elements of like its discussion with addiction, which is something that I like am constantly revisiting because I'm an addict forever, but also like the Cassie parts of the story, which we didn't really get into, but like when it comes to code switching and changing your identity for the sake of survival is such a storyline I've never seen experienced. And then I got to play it in a video game. So like, I know everything that I love about it might not be someone's favorite, and that is fine by me. I love this game so much, and I'm excited to experience it at different junctures of my life, at different relationships that I have with like my own mental health journeys, to see how different parts impact me again.
That's a great point. But I already deleted it, so I can't play it again.
No, you can't.
Oh, well. You gotta come over and play it then.
Actually, what you can do is, if you have Xbox Game Pass, you can play this game for free. And like, I'm not an Xbox shill. I just think once...
Clearly you are.
Well, wait a minute.
It's literally you're shilling Xbox.
Once in a while, I think you got to acknowledge how fantastic that is for games. If it wasn't for the show, I would never have played this game, except for Xbox Game Pass makes that possible. Like, I would play this game like independent of the show because IGN
gets shit for this all the time.
Dude, I don't care. I don't care. I don't care if people.
No. That's what I'm saying is it's such a good deal that our reporters who are just exposed to it because of the news or they'll see what's on Game Pass, our reporters will constantly just tweet shit like, man, it really, like, Xbox Game Pass is an amazing deal. I just wanted people to know so that they can get it. And everyone's always like, Xbox must have cut you a check. And it's like, no, it's such a good deal that people are motivated to tell others about
it. It's irresponsible as people who talk about games critically, it's irresponsible not to mention it sometimes. And this is like, this is one of those times where it's like, that game is one of the best games of the year and it came out for free on day one. And most people probably won't play it because it's not like a, you know, an AAA thing. And like, hey, you know, Xbox is doing something for gaming with this. You know, anyway, that's it.
Right. And that indeed is it. I'm sorry it couldn't be longer, but I have to dip out to lead an AA meeting. So addiction themes also resonate with this young bear.
Mm.
You like that, Adam? You like how
I like that you're a young bear. I've always thought of you that way.
That I'm a young bear? I don't know. I'm just trying it out.
Yeah. I think it was a nice outing.
Like it.
Yeah. Agreed. Right.
This was fine.
this was fine. What a fine podcast we put out today.
I mean, if you average out Vanessa's incredibly insightful points with what we talked about, it was a fine episode.
I would say it would be even double fine.
Okay, we'll leave
this
on that.
This is why she's...
Yeah, bad pun.
That's a mic drop. Yeah. Let's get out of here.
Work complete.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notified, and Amex card member benefits at select events... You'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Hey, guys. Back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah. And some waves. So we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that.
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in.
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it.
Tenor girl go shopping.
Yeah, baby.
Wait. Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.